All right, since it's after 4 o'clock, I guess we'll call this meeting to order. Apologize for being a little bit late. It was one of those my customers for it wouldn't let me off the phone long enough. Anyway, let's call it to order. Roll call vote.
McGill.
Here.
Scarlett.
Here.
Youngberg. Absent. Brecky.
Here.
Bruns.
Here.
All right. Based off that, kind of in front of you, board, you have the agenda for tonight's meeting. Do I hear any changes or additions to the agenda? If not, the agenda will stay as presented. Also in front of you are the minutes of our previous meeting. Do I hear any changes or additions, corrections to those minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes.
So moved.
Motion on Scarlett. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second out of Bruns. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. All right. Moving in, just some comments here on how the meeting is going to work. We've got a full house here, obviously. So I would request that if you have not, please sign in at the upper here at the front desk. I would also request that if you're going to make any comments tonight at the podium, please state your name and your address so we know what's going on. The way this meeting will work is we will first we'll have a period for any public comments on anything that is not coming before the board this evening. We've got three CUPs to listen to. If you've got any other comments on something other than that, this will be the time to do it. After that, we'll move on. We'll listen to the discussion on the CUPs. The staff will present their findings. We'll ask for some comments from the applicant. If there's any rebuttal on both sides, then we'll have that. I would ask that you keep your comments to 10 minutes, please, because there may be a lot of people that wish to speak, and we want to move this meeting along. So based on that, I will open up by saying any comments on anything other than what we have in front of us this afternoon. Hearing none, we'll move on. And the first one we've got on the docket is CUP 03, 8.2, Center Grove Orchard, Kids Farm Camp. Jerry.
Okay, this is applicant Steve Black. He's at 32835 610th Avenue in Cambridge. This item was actually submitted to the Planning and Zoning Commission for consideration at their May 4, 2016 meeting. And at that meeting, it was determined by the Planning and Zoning Commission that it was a daycare use, and that a daycare conditional use permit application should be submitted, and that they that Mr. Black should contact the state with regard to the requirements for operating a daycare. He's since resurrected this request. He's contacted the Bureau Chief of Child Care Licensing, and that information has been provided to you in the packet. It's also been put on the Agenda Center. He did receive some information from Todd Savage, the Bureau Chief Child Care Licensing, and based on the proposed program, which is a week-long program for kids preschool age up to 8th grade from 9 o'clock in the morning till 4 in the afternoon during that June and July periods in the summer, it was determined to be something that was not regulated by the state. So Mr. Black did submit the application. Again, all the information has been submitted to the Board of Adjustment for review and consideration. At the Planning and Zoning Commission's May 7th meeting, they did recommend approval 6-0. As submitted and requested by the applicant. So the request again is a kids' daycare camp. They're proposing to teach kids about agriculture, growing, and raising livestock. All the existing buildings on the property, existing fields, they're going to use some of their recreational areas at break times. So no additional buildings will be constructed for their request. Again, the school age, the age of the kids is preschool to second grade. They'll be on the facility from 9 in the morning till 12, again, Monday through Friday. They're proposing to have third grade to eighth grade kids from 9 to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. The parents will drop off their kids and then pick up at the end of the session. They're taking approximately two kids, or two instructors. They are trying to work toward a ratio of about one instructor to six or seven kids. Mr. Black is here to explain that in a little more detail and the process that they'll have in place for dropping off kids. So all kids that are dropped off will be checked in by their staff. So in comparison to the Apple Orchard operation, the season is the end of August through the end of December. 7 days a week, hours of operation are from 9 to 7 p.m. They do offer extended hours. Then in November, hours are reduced from 10 to 5, Monday through Friday, Saturdays 8 to 5, and then Sundays 8 to 4. So where we're located is just southeast of Cambridge. It's about 2 miles where the Yellow Star is located. We're at the intersection of Highway 210 and 610th Avenue. Much of the activity, though, will be occurring in the southeast portion of this area, northwest of the intersection. The Blacks own over 500 acres of farm ground. This is a kind of a schematic drawing that Mr. Black provided. You see the animals would be in the southeast corner. They've got some recreational activities for the kids. Apple orchards show up as the pink areas. There's some nature areas, the pond, which is where the third scale train is, as well as the woodland areas to the northwest. They also grow pumpkins, which is shown in orange, and then to the north of the pond is the hayfield. This is a document that was provided with the last conditional use permit update for the parking expansion, food service, and the third scale train that was reviewed. The main building is building one. That's where most of the activity occurs. It's where it's the center of activity. The main parking lot is just north of building one. That's the parking lot that will be used for this proposed use. And then during the apple orchard season, they do check in people just south of the building. And then to the southeast is where a lot of the animal pens and buildings are located. And then the activity buildings and the play areas are scattered throughout. This is the drawing that was submitted for the last CUP update. It just kind of shows you how the circulation occurs. The main parking area will be used for this request. It can accommodate up to 500 cars. Again, Steve is uncertain since this would be the first year for this program. They're anticipating having anywhere from 40 to 100 kids. So if they do get up to 100 kids, that could be 100 vehicles. And again, this north main parking lot would accommodate those numbers. So they're using this main access to enter the facility. We're into some of the site photos. This is actually looking west at the intersection of Highway 210 and 610th Avenue. You can see the sign on the northwest corner of that intersection to the orchard directing the customers. This is looking north on 610th Avenue. It's about an eighth of a mile to a quarter mile north to the site. And you can see that dust-proof coating was put down. Steve applies this application a couple times a year and gets a permit from the Engineering Secondary Roads to do that. This is looking northwest to the buildings at the Center Grove Orchard. This is the entrance. The first one is actually to the residence, so the general public uses the second entrance into the main parking area, which again is north of the main building. They have over 30 handicap parking signs. It's looking back out towards 610th Avenue. Again, processing admissions. They likely won't use this, but this is used for their apple orchard business. Some of the play buildings, animal pens, one of the play areas, pedal car track. Tractors, food service building. There's actually six standards of approval for a conditional use permit that are reviewed and to be considered by the Board of Adjustment. The first one deals with compatibility with zoning district and vicinity. Again, the orchard is located in a rural area of the county that's surrounded by agricultural crop ground, creeks, drainage areas. It's fairly close to a railroad right away. There are some residences along 610th and a few to the south of the property. Again, the applicant plans to use the existing buildings and agricultural fields and play areas for this farm camp. No new buildings would be built. Again, the program would be seasonal in June, July, each week. We are to look at transition between properties. The existing buildings are located in the southeast area of the site, situated north of a tree and creek area, south of that pond, east of the agricultural crop ground to the west. It does roll and drop to the west. These features will assist in buffering somewhat. There's also an apple orchard north of the main parking, which will provide some buffering. The closest play features are about 300 feet from the front property line. The in past conditional use permit submittals, we have heard from some of the neighbors about noise from kids playing, and we've had a discussion with Mr. Black about that. If we do get responses from neighbors, we will work with Steve to come up with a solution to either relocate play areas or talk about other options to help reduce noise. We're going to look at traffic, adequate ingress, egress, safety, and traffic flow. Again, the applicant plans on using the main access into the site. The traffic mostly will come from Highway 210, which is paved. 610th, however, is a gravel road, but he does provide the dust treatments twice a year. He did provide estimates for the summer. Averages anywhere from mid-40s to low 50 vehicles. With the last conditional use permit, there was a requirement that an engineer do a study on traffic. And based on the engineer's study in July, they were there in July and in October during the peak season, they counted about 50-some vehicles on 610th. But again, most of this increase will come before 9 o'clock, before 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and then for the preschool kids before noon. And again, he's planning on anywhere from 40 to 100 kids. And then so to look at the number of trips, we try to figure out, you know, how many trips that would generate. A trip to and leaving would be two trips. So if we do, if he did get 100 kids or 100 cars, it could be up to 400 vehicle trips each week, each day. Comparison of vehicle count for the apple orchard. The DOT does do annual daily traffic counts. They did them for 2011. They counted 1,250 cars on 210. In 2015, the counts were up to 1,510 vehicles, 70 for 610th Avenue. Again, the engineer did do a study, and in October of last year during the prime weekend, they counted 1,460 vehicles west of the intersection, 1,400 east of the intersection. That was in July, and then in October they counted 7,300 vehicles west of the intersection and 2,700 east of the intersection. So with this proposed use, it will be greater than what is typical for June and July, but much less than what their maximum volumes are during their peak season in the fall. We're going to look at parking and loading. We just adopted an amendment to the agritourism regulations, and it's one space for every 200 square feet of enclosed area. Plus, if you just look at the outdoor space, it's supposed to be one space per 1,000 square foot. If you look at just the building play area, it's about a 20-acre area. That could yield over 800 spaces. Mr. Black has indicated that that north parking lot, which is the space that they're going to be using to drop off, will accommodate over 500 vehicles. Again, I mentioned there's 32 handicapped spots. And then there are the orchards are to the north, which provide some buffering. No signs of lighting are proposed. We're also supposed to look at the environmental protection, natural and vision resources, impact on noise, dust, odor, and ground pollution. There will be some noise from vehicles, occasional noise from kids playing during break. Buildings and activities are, we feel, an adequate distance from the creeks and drainage areas. Except for the agricultural buildings, there's minimal impervious surface or hard surface pavement, which helps to reduce stormwater drainage. During their operation season, they do have garbage cans throughout the site, which will be used for this. And then last year, Mr. Black did obtain a permit from the Iowa DNR for the to handle the wastewater during their peak operation. And that was a question from our Environmental Health Department about how much water and wastewater would be generated, and his engineer provided comment on that and determined that the existing new system would be adequate for what was being proposed. So in the Story County Land Development Regulations, it states that the Board of Adjustment, if the Board of Adjustment concludes that all of the above development criteria will be met, the standards of approval, it must recommend approval of the application unless it concludes that, if completed as proposed, there's a strong probability the development will, one, not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing or working in adjoining or surrounding property. Request, again, will be confined to the site itself, including the existing use of the existing buildings and agricultural areas. Two, impair an adequate supply of light and air. The use is surrounded by agricultural fields, creeks, and drainage areas. Three, unduly increase congestion in roads or hazards from fire, flood, or similar dangers. Traffic levels, again, will be increased from what they typically experience in the summer, but will be much less than what the fall operation yields. Four, diminish or impair established property values. Again, this is a seasonal request during the months of June and July, and we did not receive comment about the request or the, you know, any negative impact on this request from the assessment office. And then the fifth thing is not to be in accord with the intent or purpose and spirit of the land development regulations or county development plan. It's in a ag conservation area designation in the C2C plan. It's orientated toward preserving the county's rural character and high-value ag land, protecting environmental sensitive areas. And again, this proposed use should not have a negative impact on ag land or the environmental sensitive areas. We adopted, with the revision that we went through with agritourism uses, these guidelines, and these are responses provided by the applicant. I'll just go through a few of them. The agritourism farm promotes the county's rural character or crop and or livestock production through value-added ag or education activities. Again, there's over 500 acres on the farm. They intend to educate kids about growing and raising, you know, caring and raising for livestock and the joys of farming. Two, the agricultural farm use shall not alter or detract from the primary crop or livestock production use. Camp encourages campers to explore the farm and the livestock areas, and it goes on. It should be an accessory in size and operation to the primary crop and livestock production use. And again, this would supplement, it's an educational element, is the primary factor here. Existing buildings will be used. We went through the hours of operation. He does do dust control twice a year, and will continue to do that. He did obtain the permit from the Iowa DNR for the septic system that's on there. He did provide additional information about emergency response and communicated to us that he's worked with the Story County Sheriff's Department with different scenarios on dealing with abductions or issues with children, and provided that. Has had contact with the insurance company but they're covered for this proposed request. Information was submitted to all the departments in the county for review, and these are some of the comments that Planning and Development had. Again, one of the most important ones is the comment about the wastewater system and the amount of water and wastewater that would be generated, and the engineer commented that it was adequately designed for what was proposed. We did send notices to property owners within a quarter of a mile of all of the property February 26th and did not receive any comments. There were no comments from the Planning and Zoning Commission on March 7th. Brings to the points to consider for the Board of Adjustment. Staff raises five. The proposed farm camp will utilize existing access, parking, buildings, production, and livestock locations. Again, this is a seasonal request for 2 months out of the year. It will be offered during the day, during the daylight hours. And we believe that it meets the agritourism definition and recently adopted guidelines and promotes agritourism through education. And again, as I mentioned, the traffic will be greater than what they typically experience in the summer, but significantly less than during the fall operation peak time. So with that, that brings to the alternatives. The Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval, again, of this request, which is 03-08-2, or .2, and it's alternative one. Board of Adjustment approves the conditional use permit as put forth in CUP 03-08.2. And with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Questions for Jerry Moore?
Comments from the public? Hearing none? Yes, we'll close and deliberate.
And Mr. Black is here if you have questions.
Sitting in back seat, has red sweatshirt.
Yes. Do you have any questions?
Did you want to make any comments?
I have no comments unless you guys have questions.
Okay. Any questions for Steve? All right. Thank you. I couldn't see you back there. Apologize.
All right.
On that, I guess we'll close and deliberate then. Comments?
If I may, I would move we accept the conditional use permit on using number one.
Motion out of Bruns. Do we hear a second?
Second.
Second out of Brecky. Roll call vote.
McGill.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Brecky.
Aye.
Bruns.
Aye.
Very good. Here you go, Steve.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on, we'll move on to CUP 01-18, Country Living Court, LLC.
Hello.
Hello.
I'll be presenting on this one. Okay, so this is a conditional use permit to allow recreational vehicles at Country Living, which is an existing manufactured housing community. There are 37 lots in the manufactured housing community. They're not proposing any additional lots. These would just be RVs that could be switched in with the manufactured homes. There are 10 spaces that have the proper electrical connections to accommodate these RVs. And so the application is for 10 RVs to be permitted in the manufactured housing community. The manufactured housing community was established in 1972. It was expanded in 1992, so that's how you have the total of the 37 lots. Again, we're only proposing 10 of these spaces to have RVs in them. The applicant has stated that over the years, there's been less demand for manufactured home spaces, but increasing demand for RV spaces. And this isn't short-term recreational RVs. It's more of a type of housing, a transitional housing need, potentially for, you know, large construction projects in the area or that kind of use. The applicant has stated that they rent for a minimum of 14 days Whereas, you know, when you have recreational RV uses at campgrounds, a lot of the time, for instance, in Hickory Grove, which is actually across the street from this manufactured housing community, a park, the DNR requires maximum stay of 14 days. So it's not really a recreational use, more of a type of transitional or short-term housing. The manager of Country Living noted that they began to lease these manufactured home lots to RVs in 2005. We have recently been working through a work program item where we do annual inspections of manufactured housing communities in Story County, and it was noted on our recent inspection that a conditional use permit would be required for this use. A couple rules apply when you bring in an RV to Country Living. They have to connect to water, gas, and sewer in the same manner as a manufactured home, so there's no dump-out station or what have you. They also are all required to have adequate bathroom facilities and are required to have adequate skirting in the wintertime. There's some photos that I'll show you of what that looks like. Again, there's a 14-day minimum lease. And the community has some existing improvements since it is a manufactured housing community. There's an existing 20-foot wide two-way looped drive. There's also an access drive that's 28 feet wide. There's a storm shelter and some common recreation space. And all of the lots have parking available on site, so there's no on-street parking. There is a gravel visitor parking area, however. There is an existing wastewater lagoon system. This was constructed in 1999. The DNR is the authorized agent for this lagoon system because it is a larger system. And so they have a national pollutant discharge elimination permit for the system. Their NPDES permit includes a compliance schedule for dissolved oxygen, and they must submit a facility plan to the DNR to address this issue by February of 2019. Country Living, as previously noted, does allow RVs during the winter time with appropriate skirting. Our current ordinance for commercial campgrounds and travel trailer parks has a limit of 30 days duration from October through April. The Board of Supervisors recently approved a text amendment to allow permanent cabins through this conditional use permit, and during that process, they instructed staff to draft an additional text amendment related to this duration of stay requirement. This may include a year-round cumulative total instead of just during the winter months. It may include differentiating between the duration of stay allowed in recreational campgrounds versus in manufactured housing communities. That's something that we will be addressing here soon, and we'll continue to work with Country Living to communicate what those requirements are and make sure they meet those. So here's a vicinity map. You can see the star is where Country Living is located. Here's Colo. The subject property is zoned residential manufactured housing district. This is the only residential zoning district where a campground or travel trailer park could be permitted through a conditional use permit. Otherwise, they're permitted in the A1 agricultural district and commercial light industrial districts. You can see there is an R1 zoned area just to the west of the subject property. There's actually only one house here, so it hasn't been developed as an agricultural field. And then south, you have Hickory Grove Park, which is a county park. Kind of zooming in here on the subject property, this is our C2C plan, comprehensive plan map. You can see that it is designated as rural residential area, and there's an overlay of natural resources area as well. There's no development in the natural resources area that's occurring. Again, there's no expansion proposed here. But with that rural residential designation, I think it's important to note that because of that rural residential designation is compatible or considered compatible in our C2C plan with the residential mobile home zoning district, this is really the only instance where RVs and travel trailer parks could be considered with a future land use that is residential, because this is in a manufactured housing community that is zoned appropriately for that community. Here's a site, an aerial photo of the site as well. You can see that this natural area is a wooded area that provides a pretty large buffer on both sides of the park. There's an additional landscaping buffer to the east, and then there's an additional planting buffer here as well. Here's a site plan, so you can see the 37 lots. This is the mailboxes. This is the storm shelter. The RV spots are located, they're scattered throughout the park, but these are the spaces where there is that electric hookup for RVs installed. The other spaces don't have that. I think we assume that, you know, as manufactured housing lots became available and were vacant, then the electrical hookups were installed to allow RVs, and that's why you have that scattered pattern. So here's some site photos. This is looking west at 250th. It's a paved county road looking east. Here is looking north at the development. You can see just to the west of here, there is an open recreational field that is part of the subject property. You can see the guest parking area as well just to the north in this site photo here. This is the 1992 expansion area. This is looking at one of the RV lots. This is on the Loop Drive now in the western portion, original portion of the park. This is looking at another RV-compatible lot. There are several RV-compatible lots here, as well as to the west on these lots. We'll zoom in on those ones as well. Here's another lot. You can see that the electric hookup is on this post here. This is looking at southeast from the Loop Drive at one of the RV-compatible lots. Another RV-compatible lot. And this is an RV-compatible lot, and this RV is in the process of being removed. Standards of approval. We've concluded that all standards of approval are met, so I'm not going to go through them unless you have questions, then I'm happy to. But we have standards for compatibility, transition, traffic, parking and loading, signs and lighting, and environmental protection. You must also conclude that if all of the standards of approval are met, the application will not adequately. I always get tripped up on this one. If completed as proposed, there is a strong probability that the developer will not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare, impair an adequate supply of light and air, create congestion on the roads, diminish or impair property values, or not be in accord with RC2C plan. So some points to consider on these standards of approval. Again, this is zoned residential manufactured housing. Commercial campgrounds are permitted through a conditional use permit. This zoning district is also compatible with the future land use in our C2C plan and principles for the rural residential district. Again, because of that zoning district, this is the only instance where a travel trailer park could be considered compatible with a future land use that is residential. An existing manufactured housing community on the subject property has been previously permitted in 1972 and a 1992 expansion. They are requesting to allow RVs to be located on 10 of these previously approved 37 lots. There's no expansion. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended a condition that a modification to the conditional use permit would be required if any additional RV spaces were converted. The applicant also has rules for the installation of these RVs, including having adequate bathroom facilities and connecting to water, gas, and sewer as a manufactured home would. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended these rules as a condition of approval. The applicant also has stated that the minimum rental term is 14 days. Just again noting that this is the cutoff, you know, for a recreational park. The Iowa DNR requires that there's a maximum of 14 days a spot can be leased to an RV. And again, the Iowa DNR is the authorized agent for the wastewater system and working with them on a facility plan to address compliance with their NPDES permit. There are supplemental standards for commercial campgrounds and travel trailer parks. There's a minimum area requirement that's met. It's a 29.82 net acre property. There's density requirements, again, with the large size of the property that is met. There are requirements for the size of the driveways, and I will note that these drives were permitted through the previous approvals of the manufactured housing community, and so they are smaller than required. You know, if there was an improvement being made, we may require them to come into conformance. But I will note that a two-way drive, the width of a two-way drive in a manufactured housing community is required to be 20 feet in width versus the required 25 feet in width for a commercial campground and travel trailer park. So the zoning district requires a smaller width drive than this conditional use permit would. Some notes on screening. We saw the wooded areas that provide buffers earlier to the north and the west. There is screening on the eastern side, a planting buffer as well, with this supplemental standard for travel trailer parks and commercial campgrounds. These wooded areas are required to exceed 10 feet in width, which they do. The common service buildings are permitted. There is a storm shelter. There is off-drive parking required, which is provided on each RV lot. Gravel spaces are provided. And E911 addresses shall be posted for each site. This is recommended to be required as a condition, and their installation is also recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission as a condition within 30 days of the approval of this conditional use permit. So with the manufactured homes, usually a number is posted on the side of the home, but this, because the RVs might turn around faster, it would be stakes in the ground with a number. Some comments. Margaret with Environmental Health commented on the lagoon situation with the Iowa DNR. The treasurer noted that there are delinquent taxes on the property. We did provide notice to cities within 2 miles, as well as utilities and surrounding property owners within a quarter mile. We received no comments. And so the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended unanimous approval of the conditional use permit at their March 7th meeting with these following conditions. The conditions are that the 911 addresses are installed within 30 days, delinquent taxes on the property and individual units are paid to current status. The RVs shall connect in the same manner as a manufactured home to water, gas, and sewer, and have adequate bathroom facilities and adequate skirting in the winter, and any modification to the conditional use permit is required for the conversion of any additional lots to RV spaces. So that is alternative two, approval with conditions. Any questions for staff?
Any questions for staff, Gordon?
I have one.
Sure.
Has Barbara's concerns with the lagoon been addressed? Have they gotten a yay or a nay?
So the DNR is the one that enforces that permit on the lagoon, and so the DNR has set a deadline of 2019 to submit a new facility plan, so they haven't been addressed, but there's a timeline set out for that as well with the DNR. So that would either be upgrades to the new lagoon. You know, there was discussion, and this was in your staff report, of the park connecting to city sewer with Colo. There was an item yesterday on the Board of Supervisors agenda for Hickory Grove Park to connect, but I haven't had any information or communication with Colo on this manufactured housing community connecting. But the DNR will be enforcing that compliance with that permit, yes.
Are there limits on the side of the RVs, or no?
No.
A couple of comments. Had we done a water test on the wells?
They're connected to rural water.
So they are connected to rural water. The other thing I think before we would say yay or nay, they need to do some maintenance and cleanup around the place. Mm-hmm. I drove it yesterday. Not desirable to me.
And you could make that a condition. we have been working, again, through our work program item with the manufactured housing communities in Story County. Last year, we worked with them to do some cleanup. I think there was a notice of violation, but you could make that a condition if you had specifics.
It was primarily on the northeast side of the area where the existing mobile homes are. So specifically, are you talking about throughout the park or
throughout.
Certain
throughout?
We can certainly do an assessment
on the roads, too.
I'm sorry?
Need a little gravel on those gravel driveways.
Yeah. And they, I noted that when I went and took site photos, and they do reapply in the spring after it's not going to snow anymore each year, is what they stated.
But like Amelia said, that it could be part of the condition that we do an assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Clean.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Any comment from anyone here? The applicant? Any comments from the public?
All right, then we'll close and deliberate.
Court, thoughts?
Can you flip back to the conditions, please? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like us to go through them briefly again?
No. Thank you.
Do you mind we can add ours too, as you mentioned?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I think they need to do if they're going to run a different business, it does need some gravel on the streets and in the community. Because, like I said, I drove it yesterday, and there's some good size holes
mm-hmm.
out there. So I would think that needs to be part of the to get the conditional use permit. Mm-hmm.
So spot repairs?
Yeah.
Or just general application of gravel? Okay.
Mm-hmm. So where that is spot repairs in, Jerry?
Pardon me?
If we want to add that, that's what we would call it.
I think that could be a condition.
Yeah.
Okay. Staff do the assessment on the issue with cleanup and then
mm-hmm.
provide a condition about them doing spot repairs.
Sure.
Okay. That's fine to me.
Thank you. Good. Mm-hmm. So then do I hear a motion with that addition? Or?
Did you shake his head?
Not yet.
I'll be thinking.
I'll be thinking.
Okay.
If I may, I'd say we can go with the conditional use permit with those recommendations from the planning and zoning plus number 5, taking care of the driveways.
Motion out of Bruns. Is there a second?
I have a second.
Motion second out of Brecky. Roll call vote, please.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Brecky.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Bruns.
Aye.
Passes subject to the recommendations. All right. Moving on, we'll go with CUP 0817, Raspberry Hill Resort Commercial Campground.
Okay, this is a request for another commercial campground and travel trailer park. The applicant is, the applicants are Brad and Gina Perkins. The property location is 5500 240th Street, which is in Section 18 of Washington Township. The current property owner is the Wanda Schaffen McKay Trust. So the nature of this request is for a new conditional use permit application. This request includes up to 20 permanent cabins to be available year-round, which was permanent cabins were permitted through a recent text amendment approved by the Board of Supervisors in February. And then in addition to the cabins, up to 10 recreational vehicle sites to be available May through September and not more than 30 days during the months of October through April. So this is the vicinity map. You're about a quarter mile south of the city of Ames corporate limits. In Washington Township, about a quarter of a mile also from the County Line Road. Thank you. So I just wanted to go over our review of the conditional use permit application process. First, as a starting point, there really are two areas of review for conditional use permits. The first one is the consistency of the proposed use with the future land use plan. And the second, which is secondary to the first item, is the review of the zoning requirements. So the statement of intent for conditional uses in Chapter 90 of our land development regulations includes the objective of the conditional use permit process is to encourage compatibility of the proposed development with the environment and with existing and future land uses in the area. If the proposed use is not consistent with the future land use designation, it should not be supported. So our future land use map in this case is the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is an agreement for future land use entered into by the City of Ames, the City of Gilbert, and Storey County in 2006. If a proposed use is not consistent with the current land use framework map, there's a clear process set forth within the plan and the 28E agreement that was recorded in 2011 to amend the land use framework map. This involves a request to the City of Ames to submit an application, approval by at least two entities to accept the application for an amendment, and then approval by all three entities for the amendment to actually take effect. So our current site is highlighted here. It's about 74 acres, designated urban service area, urban residential, and natural area. The urban residential designation requires annexation by the city prior to any subdivision or development, which would have to meet city standards, and is to include a minimum average net density residential development of 3.75 units per acre. An application for an amendment was submitted by the current property owner, a request to submit an application was submitted by the current property owner to the Ames City Council, and that was denied. So looking at the urban residential designation policies, uses should include traditional village residential development with a minimum average net density of 8 units per acre. Also includes residential densities of 3.75 units per acre. The second policy requires annexation by the city. The third requires the urban infrastructure and subdivision standards to meet city standards. The fourth require land development agreements with the city before the land is developed or further subdivided. Number five, to mitigate and manage stormwater runoff, soil erosion, wastewater discharge. Zoning and surrounding land use, the property is zoned A1. There are a few properties to the east, zoned AR here. Again, the property is about 774 acres and is approximately three quarters of a mile west of South Dakota Avenue, which is north-south here. Along 240th Street, you travel west about three quarters of a mile to the subject property. There are six parcels with single-family dwellings within one-quarter mile of the subject property. Five dwellings do share a common property line with the subject property. Four dwellings are located within a quarter mile of the proposed improvements. Um, I would like to add, last month, I believe, the Board of Adjustment did approve a conditional use permit for an event venue for up to 300 people, as well as a bed and breakfast with 8 rooms in it. So this would all be in addition to that on the same property. So all of this, all of the proposed development, including the event center, the bed and breakfast addition, and the proposed campground would take place on the south side of the creek. Zooming in a little bit, there's a quarter of a mile driveway that comes in. It's a paved driveway here. The dwelling is here, so that would be the bed and breakfast. Coming to the south and southeast, the event venue is planned with parking just to the south. The proposed campground would be located to the south and east, or, I'm sorry, west of that of the event venue. They would have a one-way road street drive that would come along to the west side of the property here, where the permanent cabins would be located, and then loop back up for the RV spots. Just a little bit more detail. There is parking indicated adjacent to and parallel to the drive for the permanent cabins as well as the RV sites. Now, this is a rendering provided by the applicant of the proposed cabins. Okay, so just some site photos here. This is the driveway off of 240th Street. The applicant is proposing to increase the width of the drive to 26 feet to meet the requirements of the commercial campground and travel trailer park conditional use permit supplemental standards. This is looking west along 240th Street, looking north toward U.S. Highway 30. There are several apartment buildings and hotels directly on the, directly to the north of Highway 30 there. This was looking east along 240th Street. This is looking south toward the existing dwelling. This is, again, is that the quarter-mile paved driveway. This is looking southeast at the existing dwelling. This is the creek that runs through the property. This is looking north toward the proposed addition to the dwelling and event venue. Again, the addition to the dwelling is planned to be to the south here, and then the event venue would be connected to the existing accessory structure. This is looking southwest toward the proposed parking area for the event venue. This is looking north toward the dwelling from the south end of the subject property. This would be approximately the area of the proposed cabins of the travel trailers. This is looking west toward the adjacent dwelling from the south end of the subject property. This is the closest dwelling to the proposed improvements. This is looking south at the agricultural property to the south of the site. And then looking west from the south end of the subject property. So it's looking east from the south end of the subject property. As you can see from the aerial imagery, there is quite a nice buffer of trees along the eastern edge of the property there. And this is looking northeast from the south end of the subject property toward the dwelling again. So our standards of approval for conditional use permits. The first one is compatibility. The proposed commercial cabins and RV spots will meet the setback requirements of the commercial campground conditional use permit supplemental standards. All proposed development will be located on the south side of the creek. Staff feel that camping does not compare to the uses associated with single-family dwellings. Camping may involve hiking on the property and also near to other adjacent properties, outdoor parties, activities, and recreation involving music, cooking, bonfires, and other noisy activities. Outdoor lights, fireworks, and other late-night activities may be disruptive to adjacent neighbors. The addition of the commercial campground with as many as 20 cabins, accommodating up to 6 guests each, plus 10 RV sites, accommodating, say, 2 to 4 guests, could potentially have a major impact on the immediate vicinity, due primarily to the potential noise and traffic. Again, I would add that this is in addition to the event venue and bed and breakfast. Such a commercial use may also have an impact on the future residential growth of this area. The second standard is transition. There are many trees and is a large natural area on the property that may act as a partial buffer of the proposed uses. All development, again, will be located on the south side of the creek between a quarter mile and a half mile south of 240th Street. The proposed campground use is proposed to be developed to the southwest of the existing dwelling, which really increases the density and the intensity of the use throughout the 74-acre site. If the proposed use is approved, the applicant will be required to add landscaping equivalent to 20% of the impervious surface being added to the site. The additional landscaping should be placed in areas to further screen the proposed uses from the adjacent properties. Staff does feel, however, that it would be difficult to fully buffer the potential noise and disruption caused by commercial campground users. The third standard is traffic. The average annual daily traffic count on 240th Street is 60 vehicles. That was in 2015. That's the most recent count they've done. Based on 50% capacity of the cabins, the applicant estimates approximately 60 additional trips along the stretch of 240th Street each day, which is an increase of 100% along the road. This does not take into account the RV spaces, the bed and breakfast, and the event venue. In total, with all the proposed uses on the site, filling everything to maximum capacity, there could potentially be nearly 500 people on the site at one time. Story County Engineering and Secondary Roads will require the applicant to provide dust control measures. If the traffic counts exceed 150 average annual daily traffic vehicles, this is a condition of the bed and breakfast and event venue, and the applicant has indicated that he's very willing to do the dust control. Parking and loading. Parking for the proposed cabins and RV parking spaces are located directly adjacent and parallel to the proposed drive near each unit. The supplemental standards for commercial campground and travel trailer park require one space for each unit space, which has been provided. The proposed one-way drive that extends south from the event venue and provides access to the proposed cabins and RV parking spots must be at least 18 feet in width. Again, the applicant is proposing to expand the existing two-way drive from 240th Street south to meet the requirement of 25 feet in width. With the exception of traffic over the bridge, there's a bridge over the creek that runs through the property. Traffic will be one way at this point. So Chapter 88 of the Land Development Regulations requires a minimum ratio of one tree for every 5 parking spaces added, which will be also required if the use is approved. Signs and lighting. Any proposed signage will need to meet the requirements of Chapter 89 in our Land Development Regulations. Outdoor lighting will also need to be in compliance with Chapter 88 site lighting. Environmental protection. Based on the concept drawing submitted by the applicant, it appears that a few of the cabins could and access road could be located within the floodplain. We are updating our floodplain. FEMA's updating their floodplain maps at this time, so those have not been officially adopted. But there's potential for the boundaries to shift a little bit. An area equivalent to 20% of the impervious surface added is required to be installed as landscaping. The applicant will be required to design the proposed building and site improvements in accordance with Iowa Stormwater Management Manual and Sudis for erosion control. The applicant will need to monitor the water across the driveway and make any necessary adjustments to keep the access safe for the general public. The current property owner did indicate that there's been three or four times that the bridge area has flooded from the creek, although he indicated that that's never been three or four, more than 3 or 4 inches in depth. The applicant has also submitted a water and septic tank plan, which includes harvesting rainwater for irrigation and using this water on site for other uses as well. Based on the Story County Environmental Health staff input, the extent of the wastewater generated by the proposed uses on the site will require the DNR permit, permitting and oversight. So, the analysis. If the board concludes that all the above department criteria will be met, it must recommend approval of the application unless it concludes that, if completed as proposed, there is a strong probability the development will. The first item is not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of the persons residing or working in adjoining or surrounding property. The proposed campground will likely have a significant potential impact on the neighboring properties. In addition to the traffic from the proposed event venue and the bed and breakfast, guests at the campground may enter and exit the subject property throughout the day and night. Camping uses and activities do not compare to uses associated with single-family dwellings and agricultural uses. Number two is impair an adequate supply, including quality of light and air to surrounding properties. It is not anticipated that the proposed commercial campground will impair adequate supply of light to the surrounding properties. However, the impact from nighttime lighting for the campground is unknown. We don't have a lighting plan at this time. Surrounding properties may be impacted by the smoke from numerous campfires, grills, and other uses of the campground. The third item, unduly increased congestion in the roads or the hazard from fire, flood, or similar dangers. It is anticipated that with all of the proposed uses on this property, there will be significant increase in traffic along 240th Street. With structures near to or within the floodplain area, damage from flood is possible. The hazard of fire is greatly increased with the addition of numerous campfires, grills, other uses on site. Planning and development staff have not received confirmation that Xenia Rural Water will have the capacity to serve all of the proposed uses on this site, including the single-family dwelling, the 8-room bed and breakfast, event venue for up to 300 guests, and a commercial campground. Number four, diminish or impair established property values on adjoining or surrounding property. The Story County Assessor's Office raised no concerns with the proposed development from its review of the requested application. It would be noted, however, that campgrounds are not typically associated with areas with single-family dwellings, not typically associated or easily integrated into these areas. Number five, not be in accord with the intent, purpose, or spirit of the land development regulations or the county cornerstone to capstone C2C plan. The proposed use is not in accordance with the Story County Land Development Regulation, which permits commercial campground and travel trailer parks in the A1 Agricultural District if a conditional use permit is granted by Story County Board of Adjustment. It would be noted, however, that campgrounds are not typically associated or easily integrated with single-family dwellings. The proposed commercial campground does not align with the urban residential land use designation of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan or the related policies, which support single-family residential dwellings, again, with an average minimum average net density of 3.75 units per acre. So C is the burden of persuasion. The burden of persuasion as to whether the development, if completed as proposed, will comply with the requirements of this chapter is at all times on the applicant. The burden of presenting evidence to the Board of Adjustment sufficient enough for it to conclude that the application does not comply with the requirements of this chapter is upon the person or persons recommending such a conclusion, unless the information presented by the applicant warrants such a conclusion. This was routed to the interagency review team. Again, Environmental Health just spoke to the use being so great that the DNR would be required to permit regulate the wastewater on site. Again, engineering spoke to the dust control. The assessor said this parcel is currently classified as agricultural for assessment purposes. Based upon the proposed changes, this parcel would be changed to a dual classification. The primary assessment classification would be commercial, with a multi-residential classification for the existing dwelling. The land use would be changed to market value once this parcel is reclassified based upon the proposed changes. Currently, the land value is productivity value, which does not reflect the market value. Any development within the floodplain needs to comply with the county's floodplain program, and it will require a floodplain permit. Let's see. Comments from the public. We sent public notification letters to property owners within a quarter mile of the site on March 9th regarding this meeting. Planning and development staff have received numerous emails in support of the proposed commercial campgrounds and travel trailer park. Sorry, I think we forwarded those emails to you. And there are a couple more that came in, which I provided to you at your spots. Planning and development staff also received an email and document supporting the staff recommendation to deny the conditional use permit application, which has also been provided. We do route conditional use permits to cities, and since this is in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, we route it to the City of Ames and to the City of Gilbert. The City of Ames did provide a letter, which was posted on the Agenda Center. The letter was dated February 26th and indicated that planning and housing staff does not support approval of the proposed commercial campground and travel trailer park on this property. And does not support a change in the future land use designation of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan or zoning to accommodate a campground. The City of Gilbert hasn't taken an official position on the commercial campground. We might speculate that that's because it's on the north side of the City of Ames. They tend to be less interested in those items, but city staff do believe that the use does not meet the policies of the urban residential designation. We did receive comments from Mary Greeley Medical Center with questions about emergency vehicle access to the site, first aid on site, signage and lighting of the buildings. The applicant has indicated that the design will accommodate emergency vehicles and does support having first aid and medical supplies on site. So the points to consider. The first one is that the general provisions of the Story County Land Development Regulation Ordinance are intended and designed to meet specific objectives of Section 335.5 of the Code of Iowa, including to encourage efficient urban development patterns, to secure safety from fire, flood, panic, or other dangers, to protect health and the general welfare, to facilitate the adequate provision of transportation, water, wastewater treatment, schools, parks, and other public requirements. Planning and development staff do not believe the proposed conditional use permit application is consistent with or supportive of these provisions. The objective of the conditional use permit process, again, is to encourage compatibility with the proposed development with the environment and with existing and future land uses in the area. The process includes the review of the proposed use and its conformance with future land uses proposed in the comprehensive plan, as well as zoning requirements. Through review, determinations are made whether or not. The requested conditional use permit will be compatible at the proposed site and at the neighbor and with the neighborhood based on clear standards for approval. The commercial campground and travel trailer park will likely conflict with the adjacent single-family and agricultural uses in the area. The proposed commercial campground use is not consistent with the policies of the Land Use Framework Map Urban Residential Designation in the Interurban Fringe Plan. There is a clear process, however, for amending the designation outlined in the plan as well as in the 2080 agreement that should be followed to request a change to the Land Use Framework Map. The current property owner submitted a request to the City of Ames to consider an amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, future land use framework map for this property to accommodate the proposed commercial campground use. Again, the Ames City Council denied this request. The county is obligated to follow the policies of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, including the process for seeking an amendment to the plan. Deviation from the Ames Urban Fringe Plan may set precedent for approving uses not in line with the Land Use Framework Map designation policies. It is Planning and Development staff's recommendation to deny the conditional use permit for Raspberry Hill Resort Commercial Campground and Travel Trailer Park based on site review on the information provided in the staff report and material provided by the applicant. However, planning and development staff do welcome the opportunity to work with the applicant to address a more appropriate sites located in the county for this use. At their March 7th meeting, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval of the conditional use permit for Raspberry Hill Resort Commercial Campground and Travel Trailer Park. This is a 5-1 vote. So your alternatives today are to approve the conditional use permit application as submitted, to approve with conditions, to deny the application, or to remand the application back to the applicant and staff for further review or modifications, and to bring it back to you at a later meeting. Do you have any questions?
Back that up, please. The board, the one, the slide before that.
How far?
Anything in development?
Yeah. Okay. Did not.
So staff does recommend denial. At their meeting earlier this month, Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval.
The Planning and Zoning did recommend.
Correct.
Just clarification. Question for staff?
How many of the local residents commented? I mean, I read a lot of comments, but I'm not sure if they were closest residents.
The emails, you mean?
Yeah.
There were several nearby property owners at the last meeting. Of the emails that came in, I'm not sure. I think they range from anywhere from nearby property owners to people in Ankeny and Texas. So I think they came from all over. But I do believe there's a couple adjacent property owners here this evening as well.
I've got two questions. You showed all the pictures from the north and the south and the east and the west. Do you have a map that shows the physical property and then where the event venue is going to be on the property, as well as the cabins and the RV parking in relation to the neighbors? So I know you had that map early on that showed the property with the six adjoining people.
So if we look at where the dwelling is located here, there would be an addition just to the south for the bed and breakfast.
From the house.
From the house. Then to the southwest would be the event venue. From there, the commercial campground would extend south and west to the south side of the property and then back up. So if we look at an aerial image, yeah, so here's the dwelling here where the star is located. Again, the event venue would be just to the southwest. And then the cabins and RVs would extend down into this area.
Okay, and then the circle?
Is a single family dwelling.
Okay, the one to the south and west.
Correct.
Okay. All right, and then my other question, you mentioned the bridge. Is the bridge strong enough to handle RVs going back and forth?
I would hope so.
Okay.
We don't know that as fact.
Okay. I didn't know if there was a bridge inspection process considering what it could be used for.
The property owners here may be able to comment on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? So it looks like the area has been cleared. Was it cleared for something in the past or just happens to be?
I believe it used to, and the existing property owner can speak to this, but I believe it used to be in row crop at one point and then was taken out of production and trees were planted.
Okay. Any questions for staff? Okay, applicants.
Mm-hmm.
Can I use your laser?
I think there's actually one up. Did you put one up there? Okay.
Hello, again, my name is Brad.